Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Well, thank you so much for staying with us. Everybody's been speaking about that tweet from, well, it's an ex now, from Marco Rubio, where he was announcing that former ambassador to the US, Ambassador Ibrahim Rasool, is now persona non grata and not welcome in the US. He is going to be heading home very soon. On the line with us is Aisha Kaji, who is an international relations expert, to help us understand what happened here. Aisha, thank you so much for your time. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela. Thank you for having me.
Your take on the utterances by Ambassador Rasool, you know, what did you make of his utterances during that webinar?
Well, I think Ambassador Rasool made some very fact-based statements. He was perhaps less than diplomatic. I will say that. However, what appears to have angered Secretary of State Marco Rubio the most appears to be Rasool's reference to the demographic polls. And these are not polls he conducted. These are polls that were conducted by American companies, suggesting that in the short to medium term, the United States will no longer have a majority white electorate. And that seems to have been the basis of Rubio's ire. But also, I doubt very much that Secretary of State Rubio actually read the ambassador's comments or listened to the webinar before making that decision. It appears quite obvious that he's basing it on Breitbart editor-in-chief Joel Pollack, formerly South African and now widely touted to be the U.S.'s ambassador-elect to South Africa. He reported that webinar at Mistra or from Mistra and misrepresented, quite frankly, some of what Mr. Rasool said. Mr. Rasool, for example, did speak about incumbency, the power of incumbency, the challenge of incumbency. He also spoke about supremacy, but he did not specifically reference white supremacy.
Yeah.
So it could be deduced from his remarks, of course. Now, I think we really need to put it in context, Pamela. The U.S., and particularly the Trump administration, Mr. Trump and his allies, his cohort, are particularly threatened by South Africa for a number of reasons. I'll enumerate them very quickly. Firstly, South Africa's successful transition from an ethno-nationalist autocracy to a functional democracy in 1994. And we are still, despite our problems, a functional democracy. The U.S. appears to be moving in the opposite direction from what appeared to be a fairly functional democracy, at least when I was a child, to what is now rapidly becoming an ethno-nationalist autocracy and an oligarchy at that, a technocratic oligarchy. So they resent us for that. They also resent us in global terms for the moral high ground, because our foreign policy has always been based on human rights since the Mandela era. And specifically, they are very, very anti the ICJ case that South Africa brought at the ICJ against Israel, which has disrupted the narrative of the mainstream media, the U.S., Western Europe, and Israel in terms of who really are the victims here, especially with the volume of evidence that South Africa brought to the case. Now there are 11 other countries joined with South Africa in that case, so it's not going to go away soon, and they wish it would. That's the second thing. The third thing that really sparked Mr. Trump's ire particularly is the land expropriation bill. And there's a lot of disinformation around that, partly because of the victim mentality of some white South Africans and the disinformation they have spread about white genocide, etc., particularly AfriForum Solidarity and their ilk. But also, Pamelo, some partners in the current government of national unity, and they should really be ashamed of themselves for that. What it does in the U.S., this Land Expropriation Act, because they really don't understand it, and they don't understand what it's meant to do, and that it's not just going to be taking land away from white people unnecessarily and giving it to black people, but it raises the specter of, if this is successful in South Africa, then could Indigenous Americans or Indigenous Aboriginal people in Australia demand their land back and have a a precedent to do so? Could Palestinians demand their land back and have a precedent to do so? And I could go on and on with the number of colonial annexations of land without compensation and the original people or the Aboriginal people of those countries demanding their land. It raises a very scary specter for the Americans particularly, but also the Australians and some Western Europeans. So those are the three main reasons around their antagonism to South Africa. What the consequences will be for South Africa in terms of the expulsion of Ambassador Rasool remain to be seen. The major threat, of course, is the threat of taking our AGOA status away from us. But again, the U.S. needs to remember that as much as South Africa does trade with the U.S. and is the U.S.'s largest trading partner in Africa, and that 70% of our exports to the U.S. are actually manufactured goods, as opposed to 80% of our exports to China, for example, being resource extraction type goods. You know, so they're not beneficiated. In other words, they don't create that many jobs, et cetera, et cetera. But in as much as the U.S. would be a great loss for us in terms of AGOA and in terms of a bilateral trading partner, in as much the U.S. also needs Africa, Africa and South Africa specifically, because in all of Africa, we provide the greatest diversity of goods to the U.S., and it will cause a huge hollowing out in their economic framework if our goods were not to go to the U.S. So it's a two-way street. And the U.S. should take an example from the U.K.'s exit from Brexit and what that has done to the U.K. economy and the U.K. work opportunities, etc., and decide whether it wants to be isolated, not only from South Africa or in Africa, but from the rest of the world, because that is the direction in which it seems to be going.
So I just want to bring up a few things, and let's go back to what you were saying, Pollock's, you know, extraction from the webinar, and whether he understood the context of what was being said by Ambassador Rasool. And I want to tie that up also with the Land Expropriation Act, which actually is not a land reform act, as you and I understand it. And I want to ask this question. The so-called misinterpretation of these things, is it that? Is it misinterpretation or is it deliberate? Because they have all kinds of advisors, even if they had to step out of their inner circle. You know, so the figures, as you said, speak for themselves. The facts speak for themselves. Everybody knows what these things stand for and what the Land Expropriation Act is. They don't need to look very far. So I'm trying to say, is it misunderstanding or is it just using that as an excuse to further other arguments?
Well, Pamela, I've deliberately used not the word misinformation, but disinformation, which is actually deliberate misinformation. So draw your conclusions from that.
And so the question then is, with that in mind, what can South Africa actually do at this point? You know, you have the president saying, you know, this is unfortunate, but we'll obviously speak to the ambassador when he comes back. I want a full report. Do you think there's consensus on how he handled all of this from a South African side?
From a South African side, I'm not sure. But what I do know is that our Ministry of International Relations and Cooperation and our president's have been very measured in their response. They've been pretty calm. They said it's regretful. It's certainly unprecedented to fire an ambassador or eject an ambassador on a social media platform. But it also does come back to my point that we as South Africans do need to be a lot more savvy in our government, and particularly in foreign affairs and trade and industry, in our social media use, and we're not yet there. So we need to up our game there. I've said it before, I'll say it again. But at the same time, I think that the measured response is the correct response, because we know that the Trump administration does shoot off at the mouth. We've seen that in the first Trump administration. We've seen that in the less than 100 days of this Trump administration. They appear to be going for some kind of shock and awe tactics, but they're quite often misfiring, I would say. So it may well be that while they might have ejected, well, they have ejected Mr. Rasool and said he's persona non grata, it may well be that they will, on consideration, agree to another ambassador from South Africa. Mm-hmm. I think they will realize it would be in their best interest, because they will get enormous flack from around the globe if they do not do so. They know that South Africa punches above its weight in multilateral fora such as the G20 and BRICS. And they resent that too. But they also know they can't afford to alienate South Africa permanently. So I think they're trying the same kind of bully boy tactics that they used on Zelensky a few weeks ago. Mm. And what we're really seeing is a kind of governing by gangsterism, really, frankly. It's mafia tactics. But I think when they realize that these tactics are not going to work in the long term, they'll be forced to moderate their stance. And I think we as South Africans should continue to engage them bilaterally and multilaterally, but without antagonism and in as measured and calm a manner as possible, pointing out the mutual benefits to both parties of continued engagement, of continued foreign affairs engagement, diplomatic engagement, as well as continued trade engagement. Mm. That's not to say we should go cap in hand to them. In fact, as Ambassador Rasool advised in that webinar, because we know that Trump and his cohorts are transactional in nature, we should go to them very ready to negotiate with what we bring to the table as well. And that is not inconsiderable. And it is not inconsiderable, particularly in terms of much of the business that is done here in South Africa by American multinational corporations, by American-based multinational corporations, as well as Western European ones. And that is also something else I must bring up in the context of yet another reason why they resent South Africa, is that the South African presidency has upheld the sovereignty of the DRC in recent months and actually had a spat with Rwandan President Kagame, who just recently intimated that he would be open to annexing Congolese territory, not in so many words, but in very veiled words. You know, the translation is out there for anybody to see, frankly. And it's a scary thought that an African leader, albeit one who has turned into an autocrat and almost become a president for life, as unfortunately so many of our leaders tend to want to do, he has said in fairly, you know, open language that he would not be averse to the annexing of parts of the DRC.
We now know what should we be doing, as you just pointed out, when we go back to the US with a new ambassador? What kind of a person should South Africa be sending there? What type of a profile are we talking to here?
Well, I think that bearing in mind what the current Trump administration is like, it would need to be somebody with a strong backbone, who won't easily be bullied, and who will be willing to do a lot of hard work knocking on doors and courting support, not necessarily from the current administration, but from other political heavyweights in the capital as well as around the country. So it'll have to be somebody very hardworking. Mr. Rasool did try, but he found lots of closed doors in his face. So it will have to be, as I said, someone very hardworking, somebody with a backbone to stand up to bullying, somebody with a calm and a dignity and a gravitas that cannot be ignored. That's what I would say we need. And I will reiterate here that while our Ministry of International Relations and Cooperation and the Department have made strides in diplomacy training, our ambassadors have largely, since 1994, been political cadre appointees in a lot of cases. Mm. I think we need to move away from that towards a greater professionalism of our entire diplomatic corps, and that includes ambassadors.
Mm.
So I would also say that our appointee should be somebody with the requisite humility to admit that he or she may not know all the rules of the diplomatic game and be willing to learn those. Because it is not an easy job. In some cases, it has been a cushy appointment for people who are not so hardworking. But if one really is to make an impact as an ambassador, and this is no reflection on Mr. Rasool or any of our other ambassadors, we need to have somebody hardworking, diligent, strong backbone, up to being bullied and standing the ground. Somebody who holds the moral high ground themselves or himself or themselves or herself, okay, and is able to actually use their personal attributes, whether that is a sort of strong sense of ethic, a charisma, etc., to talk around the influential players in Washington, D.C.
Gosh, Aisha, do you have names? I mean, as I listen to you, I'm struggling because I'm thinking moral high ground, great for the world. Would it be okay for the US? You know, we've just spoken about how this is an irritant, actually, possibly for that administration. And I don't know. Do you have names? And of course, these are just, you know, names you're throwing out there.
You, unfortunately, some of them are aging now.
Yeah.
And I do think we need a younger diplomatic corps.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sure she wouldn't accept the position, but somebody I can think of. Well, Naledi Pandor. Also, my very good friend, Eleanor Sisulu. Again, I don't think she would accept the position.
Yes, yes.
You know, people would say, well, why not her husband, Max?
No,
I think a female in this role would have perhaps a more delicate touch, shall we say?
I like Eleanor. I like that name.
I love Eleanor.
I love her name immensely.
I can also think of people like Barbara Masakela, but as I said, you know, some of our potential pool of people with that requisite gravitas and moral high ground, etc., may now be aging, and we need to be training a younger cohort. And we need to be taking this business of diplomacy very, very seriously because we are moving into an era where a diplomat who can easily be manipulated or bullied or bought is not what we need.
Yeah, that is the very big concern. Aisha, thank you. Really, lots of food for thought there. Aisha Kaji, thank you. International relations expert. Guys, I mean, those are really nice names. Let's hear from you. I said I'll take your calls, and I know I've got voice notes coming through. 086-000-00959. Your names, guys. I mean, let's
click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.